Hello and welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, S.E. Fleenor, and thank you for joining us for these flashback files. Right now, Bitches on Comics is on hiatus while we sort out some personal matters and get to work behind the scenes, making sure we can come back strong very soon. These flashback files are our opportunity to share with you some of the amazing work we've been doing over on Patreon. We're so happy to be back and so glad you've joined us. Please stick around for this flashback file where we share an episode that originally appeared on our Patreon. We would like to thank all our patrons and all our supporters who've been there for us through this whole amazing podcast. And if you haven't joined us on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/queerspec. On behalf of Sarah Century, Monica Estrella Negra, Kate Warner, and Supriya Saxena, I'm S.E. Fleenor, and we're so glad that you've joined us.
Hey everyone, welcome to Mediums of Horror, a podcast series within a series brought to you by Bitches on Comics. My name is Sarah Century, and I'm here to walk you through some of the creators, curators, and critics pushing the limits of the horror world. This episode, we're talking about horror comics. Joining me today are Ashanti Fortson and Allison O'Toole, the editors of the Shades of Fear anthology. Ashanti is a cartoonist, comics editor, and comics professor based in Baltimore. You can find them at ashantifortson.com and under the same name on Twitter and Instagram. Allison O'Toole is a comics editor and project manager who has worked on books like the Wayward Sisters anthology, which won the Joe Shuster Award for Best Anthology, as well as the Wayward Kindred and the upcoming The All-Nighter. You can find Allison's work at Allison O'Toole and on Twitter and Instagram at Allison M. O'Toole. Together, these two are bringing us the Shades of Fear anthology, collecting 11 different stories from different creators in a single volume, providing 150 pages of full-color horror. The Kickstarter's running until October 22nd and will help print and distribute the book as well as pay the creators. Reward tiers are simple for this one, offering digital and print copies of the book, as well as a limited number of commissions and Ashanti's Kaleidoscopic Night, an add-on PDF that focuses on the relationship between color and fear and features the conversation between Ashanti and Rosemary Valero O'Connell. You can find it by searching Shades of Fear Horror Anthology on Kickstarter. Check the show notes for links to Ashanti and Allison's work, or support Shades of Fear on Kickstarter. Right off the bat, one of the things I noticed the most was the brightly lit coloring of the Shades of Fear. If you're a longtime horror comic fan like me, you know that the choice of coloring matters for how a story reads. There are plenty of black and white horror comics that are perfect as they are, but the intentionality behind how color is used, whether or not it's used, is a big part of the reading experience. Ashanti is the perfect person to ask about this, as they have a background in discussing the importance of color in comics.
When Allison and I were kind of brainstorming this project after working on Wayward Kindred together, we were absolutely going in headfirst with color at the forefront. And that's been one of the guiding principles of this project throughout the brainstorming stages, the planning stages, and as well the stage of determining who we wanted to contact about being in the book and whose work we thought would be a really good fit for the book. The way we approached color in this project is really based on that idea of emotional evocative color, with the idea specifically, and more specifically than that, that color is an essential part of an emotional narrative. When color is used, it should be essential. I, as a cartoonist, illustrator, and professor, stress often the importance of intentionality with color. Because when you use color in a narrative, you know, not all narratives need color, but when it's there, it should be used in a way that really drives it home, that really helps to emphasize the storytelling and weaves into the storytelling in a way that is thoughtful, emotional, intentional, and precise. So that's kind of the approach that we took with this. And we've been really excited about the work that everyone has been doing, both in terms of the pitches themselves, the stories themselves, and the promo art that is available to see on the Kickstarter page. Each cartoonist did a piece of kind of promo cover art to represent their comic for Shades of Fear. And we've been unveiling those along the course of the Kickstarter one by one. And they're really stunning. They each tackle color in such a different way that represents the emotional tone of each story individually. And that, again, has kind of been our goal, is to emphasize how can the color help push the storytelling even further. And a classic example of this in horror would be Suspiria, you know, that the color palettes in that movie are just amazing and so evocative.
I think color is really essential in horror. I think that there are a lot of really fantastic black and white horror movies, but color has this unique ability as well to bring out emotional responses in the viewer. You know, you think about Psycho, which is entirely black and white, but early viewers remembered seeing bright red blood in the shower scene, even though famously the color of the actual material used would have been like a dark brown. So there's no red anywhere to be seen. But people remember the emotion of that feeling and they tie it to color. And so, as you say, I think in horror comics, there's a lot of famous black and white examples and a lot of examples in horror where the color is very representational. It just shows you what the lighting would be in a scene or what the colors would be in a scene. And of course, there are tons of exceptions to that. But we wanted to explore the ways that we can get a really visceral, emotional response from our readers through the medium of color.
The mention of Suspiria makes me think about the specific relationship that horror has with color. Many horror films and comics are told all in black and white and utilize the imagery of that to tell a complete story, while Yalo was specifically known for creating horror tapestries. Films like the Roger Corman Poe cycle embrace color and become all the better for it.
When dealing with kind of more general color theory, color storytelling principles like color affects emotion, I think what becomes specific to the genre is what emotion you're trying to evoke. And so the intended effect, the way to get there, the way to achieve that effect, and the way to elicit those responses in viewers or readers will naturally vary by genre. And with that in mind, the way that one approaches color becomes fine-tuned to the intent and purpose of the context. And with horror specifically, I think that it relates to the kind of atmosphere that one is trying to set up. So thinking about like a very eerie, very haunting horror story, you might, you know, set it up with a certain color palette that indicates that atmosphere, that emotional atmosphere. Perhaps softer, moodier colors. But if you want something to have an enormous impact on a reader, using color contrast in moments of narrative contrast. So if it's been kind of slow and eerie all throughout, but then something shocking and explosive happens, shifting the color approach to suit the narrative twists and turns, the narrative emotional twists and turns, and the emotional responses you want the reader to experience, it's all part of a color design approach. And that can vary in terms of color palette. It can vary all over the place. And that's something that we see in the lineup for Shades of Fear as well, and in the promo art. Each one has a different color palette, and each one is using a color palette that is suited to the specific kind of fear that the cartoonist in question wants to elicit from readers.
Horror comics have an ebb and flow whenever it comes to popularity, but today there is an immense push for more horror, as well as publishers that focus exclusively on horror. The history of horror comics is a wide-reaching thing that has influenced creators and fans of the genre in a very real way, so I wanted to know more about Ashanti and Allison's personal relationship with horror comics.
I have a little bit of a secret to reveal here, which is that most of my life I haven't really been interested in horror as a genre, and most of my career in comics, I haven't delved into horror comics whatsoever beyond reading them in a more casual capacity and enjoying them absolutely in that capacity. This is actually, for me, my first horror project, both as an editor in the context of editing the anthology, but also as a cartoonist, since I'm one of the 11 cartoonists in the anthology. So that's presented me with a very interesting and interesting, engaging, and fun challenge, which is to really dive deep into the genre and thinking about what is scary to me and what has resonated with me with regards to horror comics and horror media in general, and what has kept me away from it, in a sense. What I found in that, in the process of kind of investigating that, is what's shaped a lot of my perspective on the direction for the anthology, at least in my position, which is the psychological, which is the subtle and the eerie and the emotional. My favorite horror comics have been those by Emily Carroll. And I've been a huge fan of Carroll's work for a long time. And the reason for that is primarily just the amazing skill in her work and the storytelling in her work, but more specifically, the emotional and craft elements intermingling in such a keen and powerful way, where she's really used the comics format to explore the emotional of horror. And that's kind of what is interesting to me as well, both as an editor and as a cartoonist, is exploring fear and the emotion of fear, the emotion of discomfort, of sadness as well, because that can factor into fear, through the opportunities uniquely afforded to cartoonists by the medium of comics. So, you know, all in all, I'm kind of a newcomer to horror. So I don't have kind of, you know, years and years of perspective on the classics and the work of many cartoonists and authors in horror. But that's also why it's so exciting to me to dive into it, is seeing what I can pull from other genres and seeing how keeping to the core of the emotional can affect my outlook on a certain work as I'm editing, or my work as I'm creating, to kind of work in tandem with Allison's huge amount of experience in horror.
So my experience is actually kind of the opposite of Ashanti's, where I've been an enormous horror fan basically since I was a child. For a long time, it sort of intrigued but frightened me. But when I was a young teen or tween, I just sort of dove all in. And I came in mostly through film and like prose literature. So when I was a teenager, I was reading a lot of Stephen King. I love old Universal horror movies. I'm obsessed with Shirley Jackson. I'm obsessed with Frankenstein. I did a whole anthology about Frankenstein because I love that story so much. And I'm not a newcomer anymore, but I am much more recent to comics than I am to the other media discussed. And so Emily Carroll also is hugely foundational for me. She was one of the first cartoonists whose work like really, really grabbed me, and that I was reading and following really regularly for all the reasons already discussed. But I think that in terms of, you're asking about horror comics today, and maybe just because it's October and everybody's putting all their horror books out right now, I feel like there is a lot of really exciting stuff. Like there was Joe Hill's line a few years ago, my favorite of which was The Lolo Woods. The Short Box Comics Fair is on right now, and there are a whole bunch of short horror comics. But I also, one thing I'm excited about is starting to see a little bit more of horror romance over the past couple of years. There was a Dead Man miniseries that was like a gothic romance. Scotty Young has a new one called The Me You Love in the Dark, with artist by Jorge Corona. I haven't read the first issue yet, but I think it just came out. I'm really excited to read that one. Kodansha just licensed a manga that's really, really interesting and cool called I Want to Hold Aono-kun So Badly I Could Die. That's also really horror-y, really romance-y. That's a mix of genres that I would love to see more of and more exploration of. So I'm really excited in comics that we're getting some really solid examples of that.
Horror is one of those genres where every single medium through which it is told can give it an entirely different effect. For instance, a horror comic reads much differently than a horror film plays, and each medium comes with its own unique history and impact. That made me wonder if the specific relationship between horror and comics played a role in Ashanti and Allison's thought process behind The Shades of Fear.
Well, I will be the first to die on the hill of comics has so many fascinating, intriguing, beautiful, marvelous aspects to the really the limitless options, limitless kinds of storytelling that you can approach in comics. And aspects being all of the different things that live on the page and the involvement of the reader, which I think is, for me at least, the most vital part of comics effectiveness with the horror genre. And of course, there are a lot of elements that contribute to an experience of reading a horror comic. But I think there is something so special and unique to turning the page and seeing what happens. Comparing it both to film and to prose, which can achieve such amazing, wonderful things in their own formats, in their own contexts, with the different kinds of effects and pacings that those formats and mediums offer. Comics, I think, is uniquely scary because you're a participant in the story in some capacity. You know, you're watching the imagery unfold. You're seeing the story come together, you're seeing things happen, and then you're turning the page and allowing the story to continue. And there's a little bit of horror in that as well, I think. You know, whether it's digital or whether it's a physical book, the act of continuing to read and see the imagery, as well as the impact of the page turn in comics specifically, I think is unrivaled. You know, the drama of the moment of turning the page on something very tense, and the next spread is a full spread of the most impactful imagery you've ever seen. You know, there's nothing quite like that, and you become a participant in it. Aside from that, I also think that comics, in a similar way to film, lets you layer imagery and play with metaphor in a way that really enhances storytelling, in my opinion. And that, as a storytelling technique, I think is also well suited to horror and the different kinds of things that you can communicate with the genre.
I totally agree with everything Ashanti just said. The pacing and the participation of the reader is huge. Symbolism and the sort of ambiguity that you can achieve by not stating things directly and suggesting them through imagery, I think is really, really effective in horror. And I also think the permanence of images in comics is really effective, because if something spooky is on the screen or described, you move past it in other medium, I think. But when you have a page spread in front of you, you can spend as much time as you want luxuriating in like the decadence of the disgusting or beautiful horror on the page. You know, we've kind of ignored an elephant in the room in Junji Ito, whose work is often so hyper detailed in its disgustingness. And I think that that makes his work really hard to adapt. I think when it's being adapted, it's so much less effective than it is when it's just on a comics page, because the stillness of the images and the details that you kind of can't escape is really effective in bringing you really close to and making you participate in that horror. One of our contributors, Tess Ennelly Reed, was talking the other night about how you also have to touch the comics page. And so if you're turning the page, you have to touch whatever it is that's making you feel horrified, which is also, I think, really unique to this medium. So I think comics are the perfect medium for horror. And I can't wait to see what other stuff people keep making.
Very well, never have seen have been told through Kickstarter, and entire publishers have been funded through it. It's creating more of a level playing field in comics, an industry notorious for its gatekeeping. There are criticisms around Kickstarter, and that is as it should be, but there's no denying it's changed the comics landscape, so I asked these two why they specifically chose this as a funding option.
I think Kickstarter has been hugely beneficial for comics. It's sort of the go-to crowdfunding platform, and crowdfunding in general, I think, has been really beneficial for the industry. For a long time, comics were sort of conceived of as guys in capes and tights punching people. Like, that still, for a lot of people, is what comics are. And when mainstream comics, for lack of a better term, are being kind of gatekeeping away from people, it makes people who want to try anything different, anything experimental, anything that doesn't fit the mold of what editors are looking for at that time, it means that they can't get that stuff made. Or if they do, they can't get money for it. And so I think Kickstarter has really helped to democratize comics because they're something that anybody can make, which is, I guess, also true of prose. But comics obviously have the benefit of imagery, which makes them a lot easier, I think, to sell on crowdfunding platforms than prose is. There are obviously exceptions, but I think that that's why comics have been a lot more prevalent in the Kickstarter sort of ecosystem than prose has been. But it means that creators can now just tell readers directly, this is what I'm making. Here are some samples. If you're interested, you can pay me directly. You don't have to pay the distributor, a shop, a publisher that may or may not be taking care of me well. And you can just give money directly to the people whose work you want to see, which I think is really cool. I have done a ton of this is my fifth Kickstarter, I think. It's the biggest project I've ever done, but I've done a bunch. It's been really successful. I think people like the books. Feedback's been good generally, mostly anthologies, but I think it's gone really well. And I've been backing Kickstarters constantly for the past 6 years, probably, because I love comics and I love supporting indie creators and seeing all of the cool, amazing things that they're trying.
Likewise. And I think a lot of my feelings line up with Allison's very, very closely. I feel that the democratization of funding, specifically in comics, has also fostered a sense of stronger community in independent comics. And it's been really nice to kind of participate in that, both as a cartoonist who's been in various Kickstarter anthologies, as an editor, you know, in the context of Shades of Fear, and as a backer to many Kickstarter projects. There's something really special about helping an independent project get made, especially when it's about stories, when it's storytelling, when it's comics. You know, speaking as a marginalized creator, a multiply marginalized creator, who is also kind of working on comics in the more traditional book publishing side of things, there is something absolutely undeniably valuable, and I would say even essential, about platforms like Kickstarter and the ability to crowdfund specifically. The ability to crowdfund work that otherwise would not get made, like Allison said, or that you would not get paid very much for, or at all. It allows creators to take the reins in their own hands of their creative output, their work, their careers, and speak directly to their audiences and sell directly to their audiences instead of, again, as Allison said, having to go to the editor and, you know, if the editor's not interested in acquiring it and the editor over there isn't interested either and the editor over there isn't interested either because they don't think it will sell. If it does sell on Kickstarter, you can have a book. And that ability to self-publish more reliably and with more liberty, but also kind of structure and support, as opposed to just kind of making a comic and putting it up, is, I think, just a really, really beneficial tool and an asset within the comics community.
So besides color, what factors help determine what stories were chosen for the anthology?
With the overall feeling of the book, we did have kind of keywords in mind or key ideas in mind, not so much in terms of content, like we need to have a story about this or this, but more so the overall feeling for the book. And our process for curating the book was that we reached out to the cartoonists we wanted to have in the book. And for those available, you know, the lineup that we have, they pitched two stories. Each of them pitched two stories to us. You know, we gave them the brief on the project beforehand. And then we kind of went through and matched until it felt right. Included with those pitches were summaries on how they intended to approach color for the story as well, for each story. So we were really thinking about color from the very, very beginning of the process, and we were encouraging our cartoonists to think about color from the get-go as well, because we didn't want it to be an afterthought. We wanted it to be really integrated with the narrative and function in an intentional, purposeful way, which also played a role in how we selected all the stories and the kind of balance that we ended up looking to have, both in terms of tone and content and also color, you know, how the color palettes could end up working with each other throughout the book.
Yeah, I would say we were definitely surprised in a positive way by some of the concepts that we got pitched, because people in the book are really excited about experimenting with form in a lot of cases. So they pitched us ideas that we couldn't have anticipated, which is really exciting. But we did have a pretty clear idea of the kind of horror and the kind of storytelling that we were looking for, which we, I think, communicated pretty clearly to the contributors early on before they sent us those pitches. So they had a lot of freedom, but they knew sort of the vibe and the vibes and the feelings and the emotions that we were looking to explore. So I think there's a lot of variety, but also hopefully a cohesion to the stories in the book in the way that they will speak with each other and not necessarily have overlap, but have commonalities and through lines that will feel like a complete whole.
Putting out a comic through Kickstarter that embraces the use of color is certainly something that helps push the genre in some exciting new directions, and Ashanti and Allison are both helping shape the future of horror through the work that they're putting into anthologies like these. That led me to ask, what would you like for the future of horror to be? What would you like to see more of?
I am personally really interested in the continued subversion of existing and previous horror tropes, especially ones that have fraught pasts or complicated histories. I would love to see more kind of reimaginings of classic concepts as well. You know, what does it mean to be a vampire? What does it really mean? What is that really like? Not just on an emotional kind of day-to-day level, but how can that idea be explored in new interesting ways? Or how about werewolves? Or how about the idea of monstrosity? And of course, there's a lot of work that already delves into these concepts in new, exciting ways. In particular, I'm interested in seeing more horror by marginalized authors, just more and more and more and more. I can't get enough. And seeing how different perspectives than sort of the quote-unquote, you know, canon of horror, classical horror, how new perspectives can take the genre in more directions, and, you know, branching off into different kind of subgenres and crossover genres and all of that. Like, I think, honestly, the more people start exploring a genre, the more exciting stuff comes out of it. Because you get more crossover, especially if, you know, authors who work primarily in other genres come in and bring those perspectives with them. It creates a lot of really interesting opportunities to explore ideas in new ways. And, you know, with Shades of Fear in particular, some of our contributors are really experienced with the horror genre and make incredible work in the horror genre. For example, Joy San, who's doing Turtleneck for us, makes such scary work, such scary, visceral, amazing work. And it's really fun to see Joy's work next to the work of, you know, any of our contributors who are newcomers to horror as well, like Mar Julia, who's doing Bellies. Mar does a lot of work that is abstract and emotional and has an art style that's very kind of flowing or organic and decadent. And they're exploring horror with that in mind. And I think that, you know, the way that having firm roots in horror can live right alongside different experiences and perspectives and forming a different approach to horror makes such an interesting, wonderful, almost eclectic meld that I'm really interested in seeing more of in the genre overall.
So I would echo 100% what Ashanti just said. And I think that that's true of horror kind of across the board. Whenever you get folks, you know, cis, straight, white, men or anyone who exists outside of those boxes, they're always this like exciting exception. And their work always has to be promoted in that way. Like you look at a lot of work that's come out that's sort of, we'll say inspired by Jordan Peele's work, whether or not it's actually written and directed by Black creators. And I think that trying to get away from that and letting people tell their own stories, whether or not they, and preferably that they don't deal with just like pain and the way that we exist in a negative way in the world. Like I can only speak from my own perspective, but I don't need to see any more comics or movies where women are horribly brutalized. That is a really horrible part of living in an assigned female at birth body. But I don't like need to revel in it for horror anymore. I think we've moved past that. So I think that giving people the space to explore horror from their unique viewpoints, but not necessarily focused on their like unique pain and negative experiences in their lives, creates a lot of really interesting story opportunities. And I think that's also true of getting outside of the sort of very North American, very Western horror canon, because we have a lot of really established horror traditions and horror tropes that can still be made fresh, but like there's a whole world out there of other horror traditions. And I don't necessarily need to see people who don't participate in those other cultures to be writing about them and using that perspective. But for people who do have that relationship, I think there's a lot of other really exciting horror out there that could be drawn from to tell new stories in comics and any medium. So I think that diversifying the voices that get the spotlight and are given the space and the time to tell their stories is the way to go forward in horror and basically any genre in comics. So I hope that we'll see more of that going forward.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter @BitchesOnComics and on Instagram @BitchesOnComics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.